welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Sunday, January 15th, 2012. I'm Sam Minter. I've got Yvonne Bo with me. Hey, Yvonne, here in the suburbs of Seattle, Washington, it's snowing. Is it snowing there in Miami?
It isn't, but I will tell you this. It was quite cold. It was like 51 degrees.
Oh, my God, 51!
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's a freaking, like, I mean, we're freezing our butts off over here.
Yeah, I can see that. Uh-huh. Very, very cold.
Well, I mean, for us it is. It got down this week. I think we had one morning. We had one day that it did dip into the 30s. Okay?
Oh, okay.
All right, that, so we did have...
Now, once you're in the 30s, okay, it's a little chilly.
We did have one day that did dip into the 30s, yes. Okay, so it's been, you know, it's been unseasonably cold for us, I'll tell you this, so...
Yeah, well, that's good, I guess. You know, global cooling and all.
Yeah, I know. I you know, speaking of that, which I don't know if you... I mean, so we're talking about global warming. Apparently, Alaska is having a record cold winter this year. And Nome got so socked in that they usually get, like, a ship that brings in fuel for the winter because they usually get their bay frozen, you know, during the winter. And this year, it froze so early that, you know, they couldn't get their fuel. And an icebreaker and a Russian ship that was, like, really designed for that kind of a icy waters had to be summoned in order to try to bring the fuel. And even that, the ship could not get all the way to where it had to get. Somehow, they had to take hoses from the ship all the way into town in order to offload the fuel. I've actually seen this happen on the ocean. Like about 5 years ago. Quite an interesting little thing. I mean, I remember I saw this fuel ship arriving at this island. I'm like looking at it, and I'm like, well, how the fuck are they going to get the fuel onto the place? And all of a sudden, this little, well, of course, over there they couldn't use a boat. I'm sure they had to use like a cart or something. All of a sudden, this small boat comes out, and all of a sudden, this gigantic like rubber hose gets deployed from the ship, and it goes from the ship all the way to shore. Okay. Mm-hmm. And fuel starts getting offloaded. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's neat. Now, I will point out, since we're sort of joking about global cooling, that, you know, this is weather, not climate.
Yes. I know.
Trends are still blah blah blah. People get confused every year and are like, well, it can't be global warming because it's snowing.
Yeah, this has just happened to be someone's. You know, like there are always variations in the weather. You know, it's not consistent.
And not only that, if you actually look at it, in some cases, like for instance, if it, you know, the weather is a local phenomenon, and some of the models that show global warming, for instance, actually show certain parts of the world that in the process will get a lot more snow.
Oh, that's correct. I mean, the one thing is that...
Including, for instance, I believe on that list is the U.S. Mid-Atlantic.
And by the way, one big part is the U.K. Because the U.K. right now keeps getting a lot of water fed to it from the Gulf Stream that provides it a certain stream of water at a certain temperature that it apparently will be disrupted to a certain extent by this and will cause the U.K. to actually experience far colder winters. So I think that one of the things about when we talk about...
that's why people
are trying... It's change. It's not consistently warming. I mean, you know, in certain areas, okay? It is a climate change. Some areas will experience significant warming. Some areas cooling. It's climate change that we're making on the planet. And we're going to make it, so it's, you know...
So learn to live with it, because we're not going to do a damn thing to stop it.
No, pretty much. I mean, that's the reality. I mean, that's a fact. I mean, there is no will whatsoever to try to do enough things to change... What's happening?
Well, given that in order to make a significant impact, basically we would have to go to the carbon emissions of the mid-1800s. Yeah, no.
No, it's not going to happen.
Anyway, climate change actually wasn't on our list of things to talk about today. We just sort of got onto that topic. Yeah. But our agenda for today, bum, 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 bum. Our four topics for today... we'll determine the order in a second. There's been a spate of assassination of Iranian scientists, which is causing all kinds of tension and some questions about, like, you know, is that okay?
Who did it? Who did it?
Then, of course, there's an election update. We had New Hampshire.
Sam, do you have an alibi for these assassinations?
I think you caught me. Damn it.
Okay, all right, all right. Okay, good. We solved that problem. Okay, good. All right, on to the next subject.
The election, of course. We had New Hampshire, South Carolina's coming up.
Did I win?
And starting to look at the general election, too. What? Did you win?
Did I win the election?
I think you might have.
I might have? Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Good.
And then there was an interesting little blow-up when the New York Times public editor, sometimes known as an ombudsman, basically ask some questions about what the proper, how the New York Times should deal with fact-checking. And we can talk about that a little bit. And then we had that that little cruise ship turnover.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Just a little bit. So,
just a 10.
Yeah.
Just a 10. Just
so, a 10. Yvonne, which of these four choices would you like to do first?
Well, since we already started talking about the water, why don't we just talk about the ship first? And
Let's go for it. Cruise ship! So, cruise ship's cruising along, and then it hit something.
I mean, it hit. I mean,
I saw pictures here. There's a freaking lighthouse there.
Right. Well, then it's a harbor there.
Yeah.
Okay? All right.
It wasn't at full steam in the middle of whatever. It was like coming into the harbor.
No. It was steaming. Okay, all right. And off, apparently, not running its regular course, which, by the way, problem number one. You got a ship that big, you don't fuck around with waters you never sailed through. Okay, all right. You go through the same fucking route you ever went through before. All right. I mean, I know that. I've been in the water for a bazillion years, and I don't go fucking around
in waters. Aren't you all wrinkly and stuff by now, then?
What's that?
Aren't you all wrinkly and stuff now?
Yes, of course I am. Okay?
Okay.
So I go, and I'm like, so that's the first problem. So apparently, at first it came out in the news, ran aground. I'm like, ran aground? So what, it hit a sandbank, something, whatever. Well, no, apparently, the guy hit a massive, underwater rock. Okay, tore about 100-foot gash on the bottom of the boat. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So the waters must have been pretty damn shallow where she was going through. Okay, all right. Number one, in order to have hit something, a submerged object like that, and then what apparently the captain did, which actually was a smart thing, is said, "Fuck, we're taking on water and we're taking it on fast. That bay, that town is nearby. We're going to fucking take this boat straight into the fucking, straight in there as fast as possible in order to, if people fell in the water, whatever, cold waters and whatever.
They can swim to shore.
They could get there, and which was smart. I mean, as you can see, the boat was right there. He was actually trying to get it into the bay, which maybe the locals wouldn't have been too thrilled because the boat would have caught under in the fucking bay that they would have had that clusterfuck to deal with. But it went just before it even got there. It started listing heavily towards one side. And the mess that they had was that when it started, they didn't start evacuating that quickly, okay? And apparently the evacuation was just a clusterfuck because they didn't even have a drill. You get on a plane and they have a drill, you go through the emergency procedures right away. They had not had an emergency drill yet, okay, on that boat. So nobody knew what the fuck to do, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So it's all a fucking panic.
You'd think they'd do that, almost as soon as you got on the thing.
I would say, I would say so. I mean, I try to do
not,
it. Like,
within, I mean, and to be honest, of course.
You're leaving port, and the first thing they should be doing is grabbing everybody, safety procedures. Let's go through the drill. Okay, great. You understand it? Go party now, okay?
Having said that, that's still the kind of thing that, people tend to not pay that much attention to, even though perhaps they should.
But on a ship, they do it far more, it's far more elaborate. They actually run a drill.
As opposed to the airplane thing.
Right.
Where
everybody's
sitting reading.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, you think like in high school, whatever, where they ran those drills. I mean, they actually make you do a drill. So you go and they make you grab the stuff and they make you walk to the point where you would be, et cetera, and so forth. But they didn't do that. Okay. So anyway, but they're running. So they're getting to the emergency locations. The problem is the ship started listing so quickly that they couldn't start literally lowering the lifeboats properly because the ship was listing, incredibly fast.
Right.
And so apparently there's a number of people missing. at least three people dead. There's a number missing. But I think just the main thing that just, I mean, it's just, I don't care what the hell the captain could come back with a fucking explanation, okay, right now. The bottom line is, he wasn't going through the usual route where that fucking ship goes through. When I go, and I usually go on trips, and most captains that have experience that I know, they're taking something that big, they go through the same fucking place every time in order to make sure you don't go and hit something, okay? That's the point. You have such a big ship, you don't want to fuck around and like try to, like, you know, play with the charts and figure it out. The guy apparently explained, well, that rock wasn't on the charts. Who the fuck cares? Why didn't you take the ship where it went through before and there was no rocks? So, you know, that captain, in my opinion, just completely fucked up. Okay? And took the ship down quite fast.
Right.
It's a good thing that they were relatively close to shore. I mean, one thing is on the opposite side is, look, if that ship had been out in the middle of the ocean, there's no way it would have hit a rock that hard. Okay.
Yeah. Like you would hope. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing like in the middle of the Atlantic that's that sharp. I mean, this guy might as well freaking like just driven it straight. You hit a shallow, massive submerged rock, probably doing 20 to 30 knots. I mean, there is nothing built out there that can sustain a hit like that. Okay. Nothing. Okay. So, you know,
I will say, like, though, just as an update, you mentioned three people dead. Almost everybody got off just fine.
Yeah, but there were 4,000 people on the ship.
4,000, okay? Right, exactly. I mean, given the state of this vessel, the fact, I mean, there's still some people missing. There's still, like, 20 people missing or something, right? Or I'm looking at the stats on Wikipedia right now. 14 still missing.
Okay, good. Okay.
Yeah, but 14 and 5 deaths now. So 14 missing who are probably dead, plus 5. So less than 20 deaths out of 4,200.
Yeah.
Ain't bad at all.
No, thankfully, after he fucked up.
Let me revise my words. 20 people dead is bad.
Yes, it's bad.
But it could have been so much worse.
The captain reacted probably, you know, what the captain did after his complete fuck-up was the best thing to do in that kind of a situation, okay?
I will note that three people, as of a couple hours ago, last update I heard, have now actually been rescued from inside the ship where
inside
they were trapped.
The ship, right. Trapped in a cabin, right.
And trapped in cabins, and divers and such are going through the ship cabin by cabin, room by room, through the whole damn thing,
right,
looking for people caught in air pockets and in rooms, I guess, that are above the ground too, or above the water.
Because those people were found in a room that was above the water, but they were trapped from being able to leave the ship. Right.
Right. And so, but they're looking through both above and below the water. You know, room by room, whatever, you know, and you know, it's shades of the Poseidon Adventure here, you know?
Yeah, pretty much. God. So that's it. I mean, captain goes, fucks up, you know, hits a big rock, sinks a ship, shouldn't have happened, but, you know, the smart thing, took the ship close to shore, probably saved a lot of people in the process, so.
Yeah. I've never been on one of these big cruise ships.
Have I been out to sea? I've been on them, but I don't know if I've actually been.
You've never taken a cruise on one of these big ass.
I have gotten on a whole bunch of them, like on shore, okay, mm-hmm. for whatever reason, but never actually sailed out.
Okay, it's one of those things where it hasn't been like very high on my list of things to do, but maybe someday.
Well, I mean, I took you on a smaller boat.
I've been on smaller boats. I've been on your boat. I've been on, like, whale-watching cruises, things like that. But I haven't been on, like, you know, get a cabin, go on a cruise for a week on a big-ass floating hotel.
I've been thinking about it. There's a reason. My parents told me that one of the good things about doing that, and one of the reasons we're considering doing it, is, like, especially on the route that the ship was, unfortunately, I don't want you to, like, you know, not do it now because of this. If you go through Europe, for example, you want to go through the coast, it's kind of nice because what you're able to do is, like, you don't have to pack and unpack to visit every town.
Right,
because you can go through there and, like, stop in Barcelona, for example. You visit Barcelona, you got your, you know, you visited whatever, spent then you're able to get back on a ship and move on to the next town. You go to Monte Carlo, you go to Rome, you go to Greece, and so that's the convenience of being able to do it on a ship, where you can go, enjoy the time, transfer from place to place, see all these different places without, you know, having to be packed on and packing and heading to every town and, like, taking a plane, which I just did, for example, when I did this trip to Europe, because we were going to, and I can tell you it's a pain in the ass. Okay? All right? Mm-hmm.
You also mentioned booking it was a pain in the ass. But, yes. Of course, from where we are right now, the most likely cruise would be an Alaskan cruise.
That would be a great cruise, too. My parents did that. I got the pictures. I got a couple of other friends of mine that did that.
Because they all, like, a whole bunch of them leave right from Seattle.
So. Yeah, and I believe my friends and parents that have taken it, which is one of the things we got, like, that we want to do as well, is to take that cruise, and all of them thoroughly enjoyed it. They said it's a great trip. So, by the way, wait a minute. That brings up something. My wife wants to go on that cruise, too. Hey, if we're going to do that, we could fly up.
Maybe. I'll tell you right now, given, you're either, like, doing it right now, or you're talking a few years down the line.
It may be. Maybe. I mean, I don't know.
We'll talk a few years down the line.
We'll see, because my wife, I'll tell you this. My wife wants to, like, go on a trip, like, in December, okay, already.
Uh-huh.
All right, so
okay,
she is like quite hell bent on doing it. By the way, all right. So I will tell you. We'll see. Okay,
it is certainly possible to do so when you've got like a less than 1 year old. It's just like, but it's not necessarily the most convenient thing to do in the world. But it's possible.
But it's possible. So I don't know. We'll see. It's with family. In general, so it probably will make it quite easier, given that the whole family would be there.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
You know,
okay.
So.
Let's take a break. We will be back, and we will talk about one of our either the election, pressing the truth, or the assassination of Iranian scientists. We'll figure it out after we come back. Enjoy your break.
Okay,
we're back. How exciting.
Just before we continue, I'm looking at a picture of the massive rock that is lodged at the hull of the ship.
I'm looking at this picture, too.
Look at the hit. I mean, look at that hit. I mean, they must have been doing north of 20 knots, okay, and just slammed into this thing, okay? All right, just slammed into it. And by what people were talking, that all the plates and everything just started crashing off tables and everything. Oh, yeah, they just fucking, like, just hit this like a fucking...
Well,
like,
and apparently I heard a couple of the passengers saying, the first thing they came on and said, we're sorry, we have a slight electrical problem.
And everybody's like, slight electrical problem, my ass! That didn't feel like no fucking slight electrical problem! I mean, look at the thing they hit. I mean, you know, if you go, like, on any of the news websites, you can see there's a picture of the ship on its side where they've got a nice zoom into this massive rock that's lodged to the hull. Okay? So, anyway. All right, let's go to the election.
Election! Now, it's hard to believe, but when we last spoke, we hadn't even had New Hampshire yet. It feels like it's been forever since then.
Yeah, I know. You know, it's one of those things. I was thinking about that, too. I'm like, it seems like it was 3 weeks ago. But, my prediction is unfolding! Yes!
Yeah, Romney's gonna win.
Yep. Romney's just gonna walk away with this thing. Yep.
Yeah, I've been posting my delegate tracking stuff. I'm probably before this podcast goes out, I'm gonna add in, like, the super delegates.
Super delegate.
Which puts Romney even further ahead than the raw delegates from the elections would indicate. But of course, the thing is also a lot, as we talked about with Iowa, I mean, Iowa and New Hampshire are small. In terms of, like, delegates and actually winning, they don't matter worth shit. What matters is the press that comes out of this and all of that. And the momentum and the fact that big donors and things like that start lining up behind the guy who's ahead and abandoning everybody else. And so the people who aren't at the top of the stack have a harder and harder and harder time continuing. Because it costs money to do these campaigns. You have to go in, to be competitive, you have to go in with all kinds of ads and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, like, and, you know, it takes a bunch of cash to do that. And if your donors start saying, well, we're not going to spend any more money on you because you're a fucking loser, then you're done.
Right.
Yeah, right. Regardless of how many elections are left and blah, blah, blah,
but of course, you know, one of the things about this election that's, that there is a change dynamic is this whole thing with the super PACs, okay?
Indeed.
And the fact that, for example, Gingrich's campaign was almost washed up without money until some guy went and just basically dumped, like,
millions of dollars
into a super PAC and let him keep going.
Yeah. Well, and you can see, like, then the big controversy this week has, of course, been about Gingrich went nuclear on the whole Bain thing.
Yes, right.
And, you know, there's a big almost half an hour infomercial thing that's basically a half an hour of slamming Romney on his history at Bain, shutting down companies, blah, blah, blah. And then, of course, the rest of Republicans are going like, what the hell are you doing, Newt? Are you a socialist? You know? Because, of course, they're like, we should be defending capitalism, not like, you know... So basically, the quick history of that is, of course, Romney ran a private equity fund that was in the business of buying up potentially distressed companies. And depending on the company, they would do different things. But in many cases, what happened was a massive restructuring, lots of people laid off, taking loans highly leveraged loans in order to pump money in and restructure the company somewhat, at which time they would, you know, sell the company again and pick up a profit. And then whatever happened to the company after that happened to the company. Some of them succeeded, some of them failed. Roughly, right?
Right, and that's exactly right. And I mean, you know, so not every investment that Mitt Romney picked was a winner. Well, zippity-doo-dah, not every investment.
Well, no, but the thing that people are criticizing in many cases here are where it absolutely was a winner for Bain. They made a shit ton of money. They eviscerated the company, made the money, sold it off again, and then the company failed a year later.
That's
capitalism.
It's capitalism at work. I mean, what do you want me to tell you? I mean, you know, it is what it is.
So anyway, I mean, I could certainly see this line. I mean, the thing everybody's saying is everyone expected this line of criticism to come up against Romney in the general election. They didn't exactly expect it coming from Gingrich.
Right.
But Gingrich is basically like, you know, fuck this shit. You know, if I can't be the nominee, I'm taking him down with me.
Pretty much.
And so what you actually see, like, coming in South Carolina, is this has taken a toll on Romney. His lead in South Carolina has shrunk because he's going down, and surprise, Gingrich is going back up again. And so the gap between them is now, what's the average here? 4.7% Romney's ahead, and there's still a little ways until we get to this next primary here. We've got like another, what, it's like on the 30th or something, so we've got like 2 weeks almost.
Yeah, I know, but...
Here's the thing, look, okay, maybe Gingrich makes it competitive. Oh, and Paul's gaining rapidly too, and Santorum's falling through the floor. But
what a shocker.
And Huntsman's gaining slightly. He's up to like almost 6%.
Well, Huntsman also, he did come in. He came in second, was it? Or tied for second over at New Hampshire? Was that it?
Huntsman?
Third. Yeah.
It was Romney, okay. Paul, second. Huntsman, and Huntsman was pretty far behind Paul, and Paul was pretty far behind Romney.
Right.
They were well spaced. It was close in New Hampshire.
Well, it was. He was.
The race in New Hampshire was for fourth.
Fourth! That sounds so exciting.
Gingrich and Perry were battling it out for fourth place. That was a squeaker.
Wow.
And I, you know, I forget who even won. Let me, I should check that out. You talk for a little bit. I'll get that.
Well, I mean, but I still, even with all these numbers and everybody trying to jockey for second.
Okay, I got it.
Fourth, whatever.
It was Santorum and Newt for fourth. Perry was way, way down.
It still doesn't matter.
But the Santorum, 23,362 votes to Gingrich's 23,291.
It's Romney.
So 70
it's
votes.
It's Romney, and it's going to be Romney.
Well, I agree with you absolutely. You know, look, maybe Gingrich will keep it interesting a little while longer. Let's say Gingrich wins South Carolina. I'm not sure it blow. I mean, it'll make it interesting for a little while longer. But I think it's making it little interesting for a little while longer. It's not changing the end result. Again, unless, you know, who knows? Mitt could always completely and totally collapse doing something insanely stupid.
He could.
We've always said, you know, the race could change in an instant if Mitt Romney is caught fucking a goat.
Right.
You know, but but we don't expect that.
I didn't expect to be a goat, but, you know. Although, I mean, if it's a goat, that sure as hell would turn out to be quite a story.
Yeah. So anyway, and Rick Perry's doing his last stand in South Carolina too. Yeah, he got under 1% in New Hampshire.
Yay! Woo-hoo-hoo!
So we'll see
here. Wow.
But, you know, the horse race is fun to look at for a little while. But I mean, like you said, I mean, I got an email from one of our friends who obviously has not listened to our prediction shows. I haven't answered this email yet. But, you know, saying that, I know you'll disagree, but I think that, you know, Romney's going to run away with this, and then President Clinton's going to win easily. And I'm like...
President Clinton?
Oh, Clinton? Did I say Clinton? What the fuck? President Obama. And I'm like, obviously you haven't been listening. I have to answer this email soon. But because that's pretty much exactly what we predicted. I think the only thing that I say, you know, I predicted that Obama will win. You predicted Obama will win because of the major effect of a third party. But I think it's time to start.
Wait, I didn't say major. I said effect.
You said a decisive effect, like that it was big enough to make a difference.
A decisive effect only needs to be 3 points.
Well, I know it, but enough to make a difference, like enough that if you took that out, the election would be different.
Right, that's correct. Yes.
Correct. So, like, you know, anyway, we can parse your exact words later, but yeah, you know, when we grade this show in a year, we'll see. I think. I think we can start getting stronger. I mean, I'm almost like, you know, at this point, this is not, I think this will not just be an Obama win it, but it will actually not be all that close. The friend of ours who emailed me actually predicted that specifically that the margin of victory for Obama would be bigger than in the last election.
I don't know about that. That's a bold prediction.
So, we shall see. I'm not quite there yet, but I think it's within the realm of possibility because look, and maybe I am there. I can maybe go on that limb because here's the thing.
Oh, now you're going to do it, of course, on a show that's not the prediction show. Out on a fucking limb like this. Oh, fucking great. Oh, Jesus Christ. Cheating.
Well, you know, my predictions will get more specific until we get really close to the election. And it's just going to happen. You know, on the day after the election, my election predictions are going to be crap.
They're going to be totally dead on, huh?
Dead on. On January 20th, I will be able to tell you who is president.
Wow. Genius.
Anyway, look, Romney's weak. This primary campaign is not making him stronger. Maybe it's maybe a little bit, but like fundamentally, he's got all kinds of vulnerabilities in the general election that are, you know, I think Obama's going to be able to pick him apart. because Obama really is a good campaigner, and Romney's got all kinds of things that once you start poking at them, you know, I've seen the analogy made, and I agree here. He's their John Kerry. Or,
yeah.
You know.
I can see that.
Yeah, he's the Republican John Kerry. He's an okay candidate, but he's like blah. Yep. And when he's put up against somebody that's, you know, relatively dynamic and blah, 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 and Obama runs circles around him. Now, and then, of course, the big factor remains, you know, the economy and what's going on at the time and all of these kinds of things. Because, like, those could still result in a Romney win if, you know, those kinds of situations are bad enough. But, you know, the trends are actually getting better right now.
Right.
And one of the things, you know, that I'm still in the process of putting mine together. By the end of the month, I'll have my state-by-state Obama versus Romney projections going. But one that I've seen, there's one other place I've seen that's already doing this, which is horsesass.org.
Nice place.
But I would actually recommend them. They're running an analysis that's actually more sophisticated than mine's going to be. I'll still like mine, of course, but theirs is taking the state-by-state polling results and doing Monte Carlo simulations. For those of you who don't know, that's basically when you take, if there's a poll result that's like 45-32, but there's a 4% margin of error, that gives you enough information that you can run a simulation 10,000 times and see what happens each one of those 10,000 times. And a certain percentage of the time, the guy who's ahead is going to win, and a certain amount of time, the guy who's a little bit behind is actually going to surprise you and do better. But anyway, his simulation right now has Obama at a 78.5% chance of winning. Versus Romney with a 21.5% based on state-by-state polls in the Electoral College. And they're not that many polls yet, and it's still very early, so this is going to change. But, you know, Obama's starting out from a very good place. And what I'm looking at so far in my... I've just started to put my spreadsheet together for doing mine, but it's also so far showing... You know, the core states that Obama is so far ahead in that there's not a serious possibility he'll ever lose those states is a significant chunk of electoral votes just to start with, you know. So, I won't say more until I'm actually ready to put out my chart. But, this election is structurally Obama has the advantage going in. Either he has to screw up, or Romney has to do something incredible in order to win.
And apparently, the sitting president fucking some other girl doesn't really have an impact on his popularity. So therefore, you know,
so Obama can go get busy.
Yeah,
yeah.
I'm just saying.
He can even go lie about it in front of a grand jury. That's cool.
Apparently,
too. Apparently, yeah.
I did not have sex. Okay.
Yeah. I think this will not. I actually did say this on the prediction show. It will not be as close as people think, because Obama is going to. Obama is a good campaigner, and Romney is a weak candidate. I think, and the trends in the overall situation in the country have been bad the last couple years, but are getting better. They're going in the right direction. So absent a big shock that starts moving things in the wrong direction again, you know, I think, you know, Obama will be able to do this. Anyway.
All right.
Anyway, shall we move on?
Shall we move on?
Okay, we'll take a break, and then when we come back, either the role of the press or... the assassination of Iranian scientists. You'll have to tune back in to find out. We'll be back after this. Bring me the elephant on the stick.
conference account information.
Okay, here we are. Okay, Yvonne, Iranian scientists or the press?
Let's assassinate some Iranian scientists, shall we?
I'll leave that up to you.
Okay,
no
problem.
You're better at these kind of covert ops.
I'll start sending the emails. Okay.
So look, here's what's been happening is over the last few months, every couple weeks it seems like another Iranian scientist involved in their nuclear program ends up dead in one way or another. The most recent one was like right out of an action movie. Like somebody came by on a motorcycle and slapped a bomb against the side of this guy's car and blew him up.
Well, let me put it to you. I started thinking about this and I said, let me see. If I were Israel, would I do this? I would say, fuck yeah. Fuck them. These guys have basically, I'm pretty sure that a good percentage of them, if they built a nuke, they'd want a fucking planet in Jerusalem or somewhere. All right?
See,
okay? Tel Aviv.
Look.
I'm like, you know what? Fuck you. I'm gonna go. Let's face it. We believe that the Israelis are the ones that put that virus inside their embedded computer system a while back.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. All right. We think that that's it. Why the fuck wouldn't they go out and take out the fucking scientists anyway?
So here's the thing. I mean, I can see your point of view, but I think it's another case of Israel. If this is Israel, and there's some evidence that the U.S. may be involved as well, but if it's just Israel going rogue, it's they think they are protecting their interests, but I think they're actually making things worse for themselves in the long run. Look, I mean, look, here's the thing. Yes, these are scientists potentially working on the nuclear program. The exact nature of what's going on in that nuclear program is unclear. Maybe they're trying to get a nuke, maybe they're not. They probably are. probably are. But, you know, fundamentally, the scientists are civilians. And they're killing them in sort of civilian territory. They're not even at work. Like, one of them was shot to death outside of his kid's kindergarten class while he was picking his kid up from school. You know, and it's I'm not saying it's better to kill them in one place than another, but, you know, it's...
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I'm like, oh, so... What are we better?
Well, you know, still, I mean, look, these are civilians. They're doing their jobs. They're not necessarily... We don't know about these individual scientists, whether they're, like, radical crazies who want to blow up Israel or not. They may be, they may not be. Even the opposition movement in Iran is in favor of continuing the nuclear program. And because fundamentally, you know, Israel has nukes. It is a reasonable defensive proposition for people in the area who are antagonistic to Israel to say we need some to defend ourselves. This is not crazy. And then also, there's the question of, you said, well, they're just going to blow up Jerusalem. Well, fundamentally, like, the religious leaders who run Iran have said time after time after time after time that blowing up a nuclear weapon is anti-Islamic. Like, these aren't the religious leaders in charge of Iran aren't the type of Muslim who are like anything it takes to blow. Let me finish the point here. But and also, you've got the whole mutually assured destruction thing. Maybe Iran gets one nuke. Israel's probably got a couple hundred. If Iran did something like that, yeah, it'd be completely blown up in retaliation. And Santorum is not, you know, Santorum said, well, they all think martyrdom is better than blah blah blah. No.
I know they all don't.
Well, no, it's not even all. There's like a you know.
No, I know it's
that's
a radical minority.
The thing is, it's a radical minority, but it's not even a radical minority that's in charge. This is not like the Taliban. You know, yes, there's been all kinds of tension since 1979 between the religious leaders of Iran and the U.S. and the West and Israel and blah, blah, blah. But fundamentally, it's not like all radical Muslims are the same. You know, it's more subtle than that. And these are not the same kind of Osama bin Laden, you know, advocating suicide bombing, blah, blah, blah types. it is different stuff going on here.
Okay, but...
And they're not suicidal. They're not going to do a mutually assured destruction.
Listen to me for a second. Look, the one thing about it is, look, I agree with you that the likelihood that the Iranian government itself would go and freaking put a nuclear bomb isn't. But here's the one thing that where it just becomes, it adds to the proliferation. It adds to the possibility that somebody could steal the material and then do something with it. For example, one of the biggest threats that we talked about nuclear weapons is not so much a government doing something with it. Is like, you know, like somebody said, I'm not worried about the country that wants 100 nuclear weapons. I'm terrified about the person that actually just wants one. Okay?
You know, but
and the person and the fact that you put more weapons out there that somebody could go grab and somebody could go do something crazy with it and then go on and set it off. I mean, who the hell knows? Now, I understand that what you're saying that, you know, it probably isn't the best policy for Israel to be doing this.
I mean, fundamentally, whatever you call it, there's some debate on whether or not these acts should be called terrorist, because you're blowing up civilians for the purpose of trying to bring about political change, and that meets a classical definition of terrorist. But you know, I'll also say, you know, these, regardless of whether terrorism, these are clearly acts of war. Whether it's Israel or the United States or someone else, these are acts of war, and you know, they should be treated as such. It just should be not just like we'll send some guy over on a motorcycle and blow him up.
I don't know. The Iranians are about to go and aren't they sentence an American to death like recently over there for espionage or something or whatever or whatnot?
I don't think that particular case has gone that far yet. But yes, they have a. They've sentenced another person for espionage, but you remember last year they did too. I mean, all those hikers in Iraq, yeah, whatever.
Right.
But they let them go eventually. There's diplomacy going on here.
There's a lot of saber rattling between the two. Saber rattling is probably let's face it. Putting in a bomb is a little bit more.
Yeah, the whole axis of evil George Bush thing. I mean, yes, a lot of people still have this mindset. But, you know, actually, if you look at it, there has been a lot of diplomatic progress with Iran. And Iran isn't, you know, this total crazy nut job country that acts irrationally. No, it acts very rationally in the pursuit of its own interests.
They go when they're visiting Latin America this week. I'm a Jinnahad, whatever, was fucking visiting again.
Frankly, I'm surprised Nicaragua. He's still president because he's had some issues internally as well.
Nicaragua, Venezuela, Ecuador, I don't know. He's like, fuck, Jesus, visiting all the fucking acts of stupidity tour, I guess I'm going to call that one. I don't know.
Yeah, well, you know, look, yeah, Ahmadinejad is an asshole, but also that's another thing that people, like, you know, get mixed up. It's not even mixed up. It seems like it's almost deliberate misinformation at times, because Ahmadinejad is such a comical figure that's easy to make into the evil guy, that in Iran, the president has almost no power. He's a figurehead. Yeah. The people in charge are... There's the supreme leader or whatever, you know, and then there's a religious council and there's some other stuff going on. Ahmadinejad, frankly, doesn't matter all that much, you know, but yet he becomes the focus for these things. And it's like willful ignorance of what's really going on there. And it's more complicated, and it's not just Iran bad, you know, which is what it often seems to be made up at. And on nuclear weapons, let me go back to that for a second. And I will repeat something I've said before, which is nuclear technology is not all that hard. It can be discovered independently. It can be discovered through espionage. It can be bought. You know, I understand the desirability of non-proliferation and the desirability of limiting who has nukes. But the reality of the situation is that eventually everybody's going to have them. And so we have to start figuring out how we're going to live with it.
Or let me correct that a little bit. Everybody will have the ability to have.
Yes, yes. Everybody will have the ability to do so. And if they wish to have one, we'll be able to do it. And right now, the biggest problem is not even technological. It's getting the right materials that you need. But either way, you know, eventually we will be in a world that anybody who fucking wants one will have one. And I'm not necessarily, well, eventually maybe that'll come down to like you and me, but certainly every country who wants one will be able to have one before all that long. And so we have to start figuring out how to live in that world. All of these efforts to like keep country X, Y, or Z from getting nuclear weapons are in the end going to be futile. And like if and frankly, we're taking the completely wrong approach to it too. If you really wanted to make sure Iran never got nuclear weapons, what you need to do is make them feel secure.
Or blow up Iran?
Well, no, I guess you could.
Oh, no, that's not it.
I guess you could do that. But no, you need to make them feel secure. You need to make them feel that they don't have, you know, a hostile nuclear power that is constantly, you know, threatening them, which Israel does. Israel is not just threatening them, they're attacking them on a regular basis.
But yeah, yet, of course, at the same time, you keep forgetting that Israel is being attacked by them on a regular basis, too.
Yeah, not, well, through proxies. Yeah, yes, know, yes.
Yes. So
but,
this is
but,
like a...
But you know, a lot of that's falling apart, too. I mean, Iran's big proxy was in Syria. That's not doing that well right now. You know, Hezbollah in general has been falling apart. It's like, look, yes, it's a conflict. Both sides are doing stuff. But the way to, like, actually get, like, people to be like, oh, okay, I don't need these weapons after all, is to figure out how to make them get along. Like, you know, and then it doesn't matter, you know, it's not like, as long as the countries are feeling threatened by each other, of course they're going to get whatever weapons they think they need to defend themselves. Duh.
Well, we'll get you some, I'll buy some peace pipes and we'll see what we can do.
Well, I know that's hard, but I mean, the reality is if that doesn't happen, then you just have to say, okay, they're all going to have nukes. Now what? You know, India and Pakistan have nukes now. They have had for, you know, a long time now. Have they blown each other up? No.
No. They've, like, done a whole bunch of tests and saber-rattled against each other, like, pretty frequently.
But honestly, what has happened here?
Not much.
No. It's better than not much. They have gone, and there has been actual physical violence between these two countries less since there have been nuclear weapons than before. It's acted as a deterrent.
Well, when was that raid, the crazy raid in into India?
I don't know.
That apparently was instigated by a whole bunch of Pakistanis. I don't know.
I'm not saying there haven't been any incidents, but there were open wars between these two countries.
Yeah, there was an open skirmish. Yeah, I mean, they would engage militarily far more frequently than they have in recent history, yes.
Yeah, and I'd say this is a... you know, I mean, as much as, like, people were like, mutually assured destruction is crazy in the U.S. Cold War, there's a kernel of truth there.
There's a kernel or kernel?
Kernel. With a K.
Oh, okay.
K-E-R.
Okay. All right.
Okay. I'm not thinking, like, the Kentucky Fried Chicken guy.
That's not that kernel? Okay. All
right. Not that kernel.
Okay. All right.
Anyway... I think we're done with that. We'll come back in a moment, and we've only got one topic left. The role of the press. The truth vigilante. We'll be back in 1 second.
AfricaFocus.org features high-quality analysis and progressive advocacy on African issues with a particular attention to priority issues affecting the entire continent. The heart of the website is the Africa Focus Bulletin. Other features include regularly updated Africa-related news feeds and a set of country pages with extensive background and links on each African country. If you follow African issues or are even curious, visit AfricaFocus.org today.
Okay, so we're back. And I just wanted to do one follow-up note. I mentioned this to Yvonne during the break, but just for the record here, in our prediction show last week, one of the things that we started ranting on about one point was robotic vacuums and how they really needed to clean themselves.
Right.
Well, on Friday, like, I've been doing this thing where when I read or see interesting articles, I post them on Twitter and then they get a daily summary in my blog. That shows all of the ones I did. But on Friday, I posted an article or it was actually a video of the D-Bot D76. And it is a Roomba-type robotic vacuum that when it goes into its charging stand is also a vacuum, and it sucks all the crap up out of the Roomba.
Okay, let me see this thing. I want to see this.
And so, so while Yvonne is looking at this, anyway, so it looked pretty cool. I don't know prices. I don't know anything. It was German.
Then I like it. Okay, all right, there we go.
So it's probably not even available in the U.S. But the point is, the technology exists.
That's what UPS is for. Fuck this.
There you go. Anyway, so while Yvonne's looking at that, I will tee up the next topic, which was...
I like the fact that the ad is completely in German, by the way. All right.
Yeah.
And as it mentions here, I got to start learning German. The D-Bot D7 is ist der Saugroboter. Okay, you can understand. Maybe that means robot. Mit automatischer Selbstentleerung der Staub wird worn D-Bot D76 in their Ladestation Abegsaut.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. All right.
Anyway, so Arthur S. Brisbane, who is the New York Times public editor, made a post on January 12th saying, should the Times be a truth vigilante? And this, there was a whole firestorm that resulted from this. But basically, I'll read you the first couple paragraphs here. I'm looking for reader input on whether and when New York Times news reporters should challenge, quote, facts that are asserted by newsmakers they write about. One example mentioned recently by a reader, as cited in an Adam Liptak article on the Supreme Court, a court spokesman said Clarence Thomas had, quote, misunderstood a financial disclosure form when he failed to report his wife's earning from the Heritage Foundation. The reader thought it not likely that Mr. Thomas, quote, misunderstood, and instead that he simply chose not to report the information. Another example, on the campaign trail, Mitt Romney often says Mitt Romney often says President Obama has made speeches, quote, apologizing for America, a phrase to which Paul Krugman objected in a December 23rd column, arguing that politics has advanced to the post-truth stage. As an op-ed columnist, Mr. Krugman clearly has the freedom to call out what he thinks is a lie. My question for readers is, should news reporters do the same? If so, then perhaps the next time Mr. Romney says the president has a habit of apologizing for his country, the reporter should insert a paragraph saying more or less, the president has never used the word apologize in a speech about U.S. policy or history. Any assertion that he has apologized for U.S. actions rests on a misleading interpretation of the president's words. And then it goes on.
Absolute truths and truths are at the eye of the beholder.
Well, look, there are clearly gradations here. There's certain things where, when you're advocating for a policy and you think that that policy is going to have good results and your opponent thinks it's not, well, that might very well be an untested matter of opinion that you don't know the right answer to. But there are many other things that, are out there all the time where people are saying things that are objectively verifiable through standard techniques. And I think nobody's asking in the questions where it's like, I think it's better if hamburgers are blue and you think it's better if they're orange. Nobody's talking about those kinds of opinion questions. It's when there is a fact that can be checked. Is it the press's responsibility?
Where do you draw the line?
I think that's part of the job of a journalist is to figure that out.
I don't know.
Here's the bullshit that happens right now is that, if you don't do this kind of thing, you're basically just acting as a stenographer. Like, what value does a newspaper or a news organization bring if all you're going to do is repeat the speech or repeat the press release, because you can go to the damn candidate's own website and see that. You can go to the company's press release and read it. If all you're going to do is regurgitate what's in the official statements, then you're adding no value whatsoever. If you're going to add value, what you have to do is evaluate what the guy said and say, okay, this part's bullshit, this part's right, this part's arguable, you know, and give that kind of feedback. If you're not doing that, then what the hell extra value you're doing? Now, I will, before we get on further, after all the furor that resulted from this, with, you know, the responses to this in the comments were like 99.9% people saying, well, duh, of course you should do this. This is the job of a newspaper. The columnist came back with a follow-up where he was saying, well, you guys misinterpreted me. Of course we're going to do that. The question is just, should it be in the article itself, or should it be like in a separate fact-check column?
I think it should be in a separate fact-check column.
Yeah,
I think it should be right there. I do, because then, you know what, I know people, and just in their nature, the line just gets too fuzzy.
And the opinion, but this is why you need multiple outlets. Like, I would be very uncomfortable if it was just the New York Times deciding what truth was. But if you've got dozens of these outlets, each of them doing this kind of work, then, you know, you're gonna get that kind of, you're not gonna just get, well, we're liberal, so we think any conservative position is obviously a lie. Because that's not serving anybody either. But what you are looking for is, like, you know, if someone comes out, and right now, the reality of the situation is that people all the time come out and they spew things that are completely and totally verifiably false. And then the press does this thing, well, you know, the Democrats said this, the Republicans say this, we'll give them each 50% of the time, or on whatever issue, we'll give both sides 50% of the time. And on an issue that really is in dispute, that's probably a damn good thing to do. But on issues where there really is a consensus, like, for instance, I'll give you one, the whole anti-vaccine movement, blah, 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 that thinks vaccinations cause autism and other problems and blah, blah, blah. There's no evidence supporting that position and tons of evidence supporting the opposite position. And so, yes, every time, if you mention these people at all, it should always be accompanied by, and they're full of shit. And don't know what they're talking about. And I'd put it damn close to that for anybody, you know, denying climate change that we started off this show with. You know, and so there are things like that out there. And I think that equally should apply to things that politicians are saying against each other. You know, if there's, and you do have these organizations like factcheck.org, and there are dozens of these. And that one actually had a lot of controversy because they declared their, and this comes exactly to what you're saying, Yvonne, in terms of who decides what. You know, they determined their biggest lie of the year was Democrats saying that the Republicans wanted to end Medicare when they were describing the plan that would change Medicare into a private system and reduce benefits.
Right.
And yes, it is the Republicans took pains to say, we will still call it Medicare, we're just changing how it works, which means, in fact, they're not ending Medicare. The Democrats' point was, you're changing it so much that even if you call it the same thing, it's not really the same thing, and you have ended it. That's the kind. That is like, okay. There's arguability there. There's grayness there, and you should explain that grayness and you explain that issue, and not just say it's a lie.
548 euros, by the way.
What's that? Oh, the vacuum cleaner.
Yeah, it includes 19% tax. It excludes shipping costs.
So at a current exchange rate, what's that, like $800?
$900? It's times 1.25 right now, the euro exchange. So there we go. So 549 times 1.25. $686.25 without shipping.
There you go.
Okay. So I'm sorry to interject that into there, but I found that relevant. I think that I always, you know what, all... I understand that there is a mission in which the press has to go and, like, when people are just feeding them nonsense.
The press's job is to find out the truth. It's not to report what people say.
Correct. I think it's, you know, because one thing is to report what people says just verbatim. I mean, because might as well just be a press release machine like you just mentioned. Another thing is to go and, like, fact check it and say, you know what, I mean, and I think that, you know, I think to a certain extent, I mean, when people go and report on something and you know that the facts dispute that, you need to present that. I think it's just, you know, sometimes it's just, you get one organization that crosses the line into, like, what Fox News does.
Well,
which
you
is,
know, and I think
how do you know then? Because they keep, because that's what they supposedly do for everybody.
Right.
Oh, the president said this today. This is all bullshit. And I'm like, really? It was? No. And they're just, I don't know.
No, I agree with you that, I agree with you with that. And I think the answer there is multiple outlets that come at things from different points of view. And the idea of.
I need to put you on hold for a second.
Okay. Since I don't know how long Yvonne's gone, I'm gonna. Well, let's just wait. I'll cut this out. I'll edit the big empty part and take it out.
Okay, we're back.
There was no big empty part, so I'm not gonna edit that out. A little crisis there?
Yeah, the dog.
Ah, yes.
Okay.
All I was going to say is, look, this is why you have multiple outlets. The idea of the super objective press who has no viewpoint they're coming from is probably a myth. It probably always has been a myth. You always have to – I think the answer to your objection is that, you know, you're not going to have just one paper. If you had one news source, that would be a big issue. But the other thing is this is one of the things why the traditional media is dying. You know, because people are like, you know, I need somebody to tell me, you know, what's what here. I don't want to misrepresent this. I it's not necessarily that people want to be told what to think, although some people certainly do. But it's you want analysis. You want somebody to take what's going on in the news and actually pick it apart and make meaning out of it. Whereas a lot of the, you know, the traditional, we'll give this side 50%, we'll give this side 50%, ends up being incredibly vapid. And, you know, okay, this guy said this guy said that, but, you know, what's that mean? Yeah, you're not giving me a way to actually evaluate and determine which one's right. And in some cases, it's a pure matter of opinion, and there's no clear answer to who's right. It's going to be an emotional thing. Which one do you like better? But in some cases, there certainly is objective truth, and in those cases, you should be, you know, news organizations should be going after that. And I think the ones that are being more aggressive about that kind of stuff are growing and becoming competitive there. And the ones that are sitting on their asses and just saying this is what everybody said are, you know, losing ground. And, you know, to the other question, should it be separate or should it be ingrained? I think it should be in line wherever possible. Obviously, with real-time stuff, there's the pressure of doing everything fast and real-time and blah, 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 which makes this difficult. Because, of course, the first thing you're going to be able to get out there is, here's what the guy said. Because fact-checking takes time and effort, and by the time it's 3 days later, people may not care anymore. But I've always said I'd love to see somebody do, like, with a presidential debate or something, or just a speech or whatever, you know, publish the full transcript, annotate it. Like, don't even publish it at all until you can annotate it. And then, like, you know, cross out with a red line all the parts that are lies. Put a little bubble around all the parts that are misleading. Cross out in some other way the parts that weren't actually answering the damn question. Like, you know, like if you actually eliminated the parts of, like, especially with a presidential debate, if you completely eliminated from the transcript the parts that weren't answering the question that was actually asked, the whole thing would be like one page long. You know, but you know, and I've seen, like, Yeah, there's also, I remember seeing in, I forget, some class in college where they talked about different types of argumentation and different logical fallacies, like, that are often used in arguments to make points but aren't actually, like, when you look at them in depth or are preying on a logical fallacy that humans usually are susceptible to, and annotating a story with, okay, here they're using this technique, here they're using that technique, you know, here's their, you know, like, they're setting up a straw man that's not actually the real argument. Yeah, you know, those things are fascinating. I think those are instructive. But the problem is they take time to do and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I think that is the job of a good organization, a news organization, is to go beyond just here's what's out there and do that kind of analysis and point out the bullshit and point out the parts that are misleading and try to get to the core of what's really there. I don't know. Maybe, I don't know.
Okay. I don't know. I think you're being wishful thinking.
Well, yeah, it is wishful thinking because, of course, the real role of almost every news organization is...
It's to make money.
To sell ads, make money.
Yeah, pretty much.
And, you know... The whole, like,
yeah, like all the money thing, we make over here this week.
Incidental. Incidental.
Yeah. I mean, you should see all the money we make on this podcast every week. I mean, we're rolling in it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah. My little bed of diamonds. Okay.
All right. On that note.
And that's a show, and I think that's the title for the show. My bed of diamonds.
Their bed of diamonds.
Anyway, thanks everybody for listening. As usual, email me, applesmay@applesmay.com. I haven't had an email in a long time. I'm feeling lonely.
Yeah.
Please email me. You know, all the usual. Tell your friends. Post about us. Share with your social networks.
Share. Yes, share. Not the actor.
Like us, plus us.
Yes.
Whatever okay. else.
Something. Whatever. Something. Okay? For God's sakes. Okay?
And that's it for this week. We'll be here again next week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.